We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello there, welcome to Pod Maverick. I've decided to call this one a Mavs party because the Dallas Mavericks are in the second round, but really this is Josh Bowe and Kirk Henderson here talking to you about Thunder versus Mavericks in the second round of the NBA playoffs. We're coming to you live. It's a little after 9 o'clock. There's like 15 seconds left on this Knicks-Pacers game, which is truly bizarre, and we were going to wait a few more minutes, but we just sort of decided to go with it. If anybody wants to join us later, they certainly can. For those of you who happened to join me earlier today, I did sort of a flash podcast with Jason Gallagher and Tyler Parker. That's already on the YouTube page, but I'm posting it in the audio stream on Tuesday at about noon. It's only like 25 minutes. We didn't have a lot of time, but it was pretty funny. Just it's two old friends who are rival basketball fans, and I wanted to give them a chance to sort of sound off about like how the basketball over the years, their friendship. It was a pretty entertaining show. Josh, how are you? I talked for two straight minutes.
No, you're fine. It's good because I never know what to say in the intro stuff because that's like supposed to be the part where you're like doing your small talk chit chat. And sometimes, you know, we are two dads, we are two tired dads, and sometimes we just don't have any small chat left in our brains when we get to 9 o'clock at night, you know, like that part of our brains don't work anymore.
It's really something too, because you don't want to be like a jerk about this, but I always want to remind people, like, I love talking basketball. I love talking basketball with you. I love talking basketball with Mavs fans, but I do want to remind everybody that Josh and I actually have day jobs and none of our staff is actually compensated relevant to the time that we put in on this stuff. Right. It's like absolutely a labor of love. And that includes these podcasts because usually, and this really tickled me to pieces, usually it's me like sassing Josh about doing a show. And I get a message today. It was like, do we want to do the preview podcast? And I was like, sure.
I wrote a rundown.
Like it was incredible. Josh sent me like a 2-page Google document with thoughts because you could tell he wanted to write, but not write that badly. He'd much rather talk about it. So we're here. Well, Josh, why don't you sort of kick us off here? Because you clearly have some thoughts in the series. I love it.
Yeah. Well, we need to set the table a little bit. So the Mavericks are going to play the Thunder. So depends when you're listening to this, but game one is Tuesday, May 7th. We're recording this on a Monday night, May 6th. So we are recording this the day before the second round starts. The Mavericks have now made it out of the first round in two out of the last 3 years under Coach Jason Kidd, which is kind of crazy when you think about where they were before that.
Did you hear the Rick Carlisle stat? Did you see that one today?
That Jason Kidd and Rick Carlisle have now taken the Mavericks out of the first round the same amount of times?
pretty good.
And by the way,
I have to admit,
if the Mavericks win the championship, Jason Kidd will have the most playoff series won for any Mavericks coach in the history of the organization.
Wow.
Because the most is Rick with 5, and Jason Kidd is at 3. There are 3 more playoff series left. Do the math.
God.
It says a lot about the Mavericks.
It says a lot about the Mavericks. It says a lot about the format of the playoffs. It says a lot about how difficult the NBA playoffs actually is. We're also sort of just, this is not relevant to the specifics of the show, but Jason Kidd was offered and accepted a contract extension today. The Dallas Mavericks let that one out in a press release. Terms of the detail of the deal were not disclosed. It was an interesting read that we'll probably have to discuss and read too much into in the summer, but Mark Cuban's name does not appear in that press release, nor does Mark Cuban's name appear in anything that Jason Kidd had to say, at least that I saw today. So it was a very heavy emphasis on new ownership, but you know, I, when you look at the details of how they've been able to get to the playoffs like this, I very much, I actually understand it. Contracts don't really mean much for coaches, so you know things could go sideways at some point. But you know, you make it like this, where the Mavericks have done in the playoffs. He's earned it. Might not be my favorite coach, but you know, so at some point you got to seed some ground and say, "Hey, it's worked."
Oh yeah, and yeah, like I don't, even if you're a big Jason Kidd hater, like I don't even know. I mean, you're gonna get mad because I'm sure everything makes you mad. But
yeah,
even. I mean, like you said, coaches' contracts don't matter. Like, even if you hate Jason Kidd with every fiber of your being, that's not going to stop the Mavericks from firing him in 12 months if they feel like something catastrophic has happened.
Yes.
Team. So, like, guys, we literally saw what the Milwaukee Bucks coach didn't even make it 6 months or whatever. Like, the Lakers have fired like 2 coaches now, and one of them in the last 4 years, and one of them won a title.
That's right.
Coaches come and go. So like, I mean, that just the course of things. So yeah, but yeah, so that kind of sets the stage, and coaching will definitely be a big thing. Cause I believe the Mavericks are going against the coach of the year, Mark Daigneault, and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So yeah, the Thunder are the one seed in the West. They, you know, just to kind of set the stage a little bit for what the Mavericks are heading into, they swept the Pelicans 4-0. Wasn't a particularly competitive series. I think there was maybe like 1 or 2 games that the Pelicans gave them a decent fight. But for the most part, they kind of rolled them. And the Thunder were the one seed in the West for a reason. In the regular season, they were 2nd in net rating behind the Boston Celtics. And they were comfortably 2nd. They were +8. Minnesota was +7.1. They had the 3rd best offense, 4th best defense. One of the few teams... In fact, I think they were them and the Boston Celtics are the only teams that had top 5 offense and top 5 defense in the regular season, which is, as you know, if you've been following basketball and that kind of stat, you know how important that is to being a title favorite. And basically everything in their resume indicates them being a very strong title contender, despite the fact that they're one of the youngest teams in the playoffs. They're one of the youngest teams in the league. Regardless of playoffs. And I think everyone just kind of keeps waiting for that to manifest. And then in the first round, they kind of just smacked the Pelicans like they were nothing. So, you know, I understand that the Mavericks have some reasons to feel confident and feel like they can be more than competitive in this series. And we'll talk about those advantages. But, you know, if you're hoping that the youth comes out, and that's something, you know, I don't know if that's something you can rely on if you're a Mavericks fan, just hoping that the youthful mistakes come up. Because so far, that hasn't been a factor. Maybe it will in this series. I don't know. But I think to kind of put a button on it, like Oklahoma City, one seed in the West, great offense, great defense. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is absolutely a worthy top 3 MVP candidate, regardless of how Mavericks fans feel, which I know some of them have been getting a little touchy with that one. And, you know, understandably so. Luka's awesome. You want your guy to win MVP. So not a big deal. But they're good. Like, they're a good team. I think there's been some narrative that they might be paper tigers. I think they're legit. I think this series is going to be a bloodbath. Like, it's going to be a knockdown, dragout fight.
Whew. Yes. the main element, which I think is really confusing for a lot of people who haven't watched them specifically, is understanding just how much this team has actually played together this season. They have not dealt with any significant injury. When you go look at the number of games played, along with the number of minutes that their various starters and backup players have played, this is a team that has been through the 82-game war together and mostly played together. I mean, Chet Holmgren played every single game this year. That is crazy for a rookie. Yeah, I
rookie
know.
Rookie big.
But it's like he played 25 more games than Derek Lively, I think. I think Lively played 57. So this team is nothing to be scoffed at. And I think like some of the criticisms, and this is just my opinion, but some of the criticisms of this team have to come from a slightly envious place, because they're such a high caliber, high pedigree team. Just be honest. They tanked the shit out of things for years. SGA doesn't have a lot of playoff experience because they were holding him down for like two and a half seasons. This guy is an MVP candidate, and it's only shocking to people that didn't pay attention to them how good he was. You know, maybe that's a little bit much. I was very high on him heading into the regular season. He's just he's a stats monster. He plays great defense. He's the quiet kind of leader. He does a lot of things which are really admirable for a guy that is as relatively inexperienced as he is. You know, he's 6 months older than Luka, that same draft class, but just he's an outstanding basketball player supported by a cast of guys that I am, you know, keep in mind, I like this Mavericks team. I really like this Mavericks team, but it's a cast of guys that I'm just frankly envious of, because they have so many guys.
They have so many guys, and they have 40 million draft picks between now and 2030. So that's envy is the thing. You hit the nail on the head, because they went from last season, they were a plucky 10th seed play-in team, which in normal, you know, before the play-in, they wouldn't even
be in
a playoff.
They shouldn't have been in the play-in. The only reason they were in the play-in is Chet Holmgren missed the whole year with the foot injury.
Yeah, but they went, usually there's an order to things. You maybe start out as like an 8th seed or 7th seed, and then you work up to 5, and then you challenge for home court, and then you become a contender. They went from lottery tanking to 1 seed in the West almost overnight. And I think a lot of people are like, wait, did they skip some steps? So not only are they awesome right now, everyone's young, their entire team is very young, but they also can trade. They can make any trade. They literally have the most assets of any NBA team. And not only they have the most by a mile. So like any star that comes on the trade market, any good player, they are at the front of, like, it's their decision. If they want to trade for him, they can, because they can literally beat any trade offer right now. So it's rare to see. I can't ever remember a team in their position being this good, this young, and also just having so many picks. Like, even the process Sixers, who tanked forever, did not have a stockpile like this, where they were this good with a bunch of future picks and a bunch of young players that everyone wanted, because kind of whiffed some picks before they got Joel Embiid. They haven't whiffed that many picks. Like,
no, I don't think any. Yeah, I really don't.
They're just, it's a shocking rebuild. It's just, you just don't see teams like this. You just don't.
Well, so on the rundown here, the first thing you talked about, or that you wrote down that you wanted to talk about, was the Mavericks defense versus the Oklahoma City Thunder offense. Can you walk us through what you're thinking?
So I think the big thing, if you're coming from the Clippers series, the big thing you have to know is that the Clippers were an elite offense, but they were so star-driven. It was James Harden, it was Paul George, it was Kawhi Leonard, and they didn't have Kawhi Leonard. And then when they did, he did not look like himself. So they really relied on basically two guys to score all their points in that series. They got a third from Zubats. But after that, their scoring was like, they got nothing. The Thunder, it's not like that. The way the Mavericks had abilities to turn the pressure up on the Clippers, because they kind of forced their role players into maybe doing stuff they didn't want to do, that's a different story against OKC. Because, you got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the MVP candidate. Jalen Williams, They've got two Jalen Williams. Wing Jalen Williams is awesome. Another 20-point scorer. Chet Holmgren, 15-point-per-game scorer, shooting well from three. The whole team shoots well from three. They're shooting they shot 39% from three in the regular season. They shot 38.7% against the Pelicans. They had one, two, three, four. They had five guys average double-figure points in that four-game sweep.
Did you hear the lovely stat that Josh Giddey, the guy, the Mavericks, who are most likely to sort of lay off, at one point in after the first four games, he led the NBA in plus-minus in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, he was terrific. He made 50% of his threes.
Oh, he hit 66% of his threes, I think. Oh, I thought he hit 12 of 18.
Even better. I'm looking – this says 50. Oh, but I'm looking at per game. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at – either way, he shot really well from three, and that's a big thing, and because he's like the one spot you hide off of, or maybe Lou Dort. But guess what? He also shot above 50% from three in the first round, and he shot well in the regular season. So they bring a guy like Isaiah Joe off the bench, who is a flamethrower. If one of their two defensive wings are struggling, they've got a rookie in Cason Wallace, who looks nothing like a rookie. Who, funny, you know, that's the player that the Thunder picked when the Mavericks and Thunder did their trade, where the Mavericks got Lively. The Thunder got Cason Wallace. He is an excellent athletic guard to bring off the bench.
Dallas people should know him. If you pay it all to the local high school scene, he went to Richardson High School and is just – he. Is, I'm really glad that our guy has worked out Derek Lively, because this Cason Wallace is it. He is awesome.
Yeah. So the big thing that I think that, you know, if you're a Mavericks fan watching this after you watch the Clippers series, is just – guarding this team is not going to be as easy as it was guarding the Clippers, because the Clippers just gave you something like Terrence Mann, Amir Coffey, Russell Westbrook, Mason Plumlee. Mm-hmm. They just had a multitude of guys that they were playing big minutes that you frankly did not have to worry about. And yeah, Terrence Mann made some shots, but he averaged about 9 points per game in that playoff series, even with the Mavericks giving him some open shots. You give, you know, Lou Dort, you give Chet Holmgren, you give Isaiah Joe, you give those guys open shots, they're going to score.
Isaiah Joe, that one hurts me, because he was one of the guys Luka's rookie year who I was hoping the Mavericks could find a way to draft somehow, because his college stats were a riot. He just shot like 10 or 11 threes a game. And with the way Mavericks used to play, you know, you wanted volume 3-point shooters. And the fact that he's like, I don't know, probably the 11th man in the Thunder rotation is just disgusting.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, you know, you looked at the Clippers and it's like, all right, just cut, you know, if we can shut down one of Harden or Paul or both, which they ended up doing, because they had one of Derrick Jones Jr., PJ Washington, their two best perimeter defenders were on them. Then you've got your big guys, you're funneling them too. You just kind of put the Clippers in a chokehold. Well, even if you do that with Shea and Jalen Williams, you know, you got Chet shooting threes as your center. Zubat, they did not play a stretch five. The Clippers didn't. And we've seen historically the Mavericks have not played a stretch five very well. Yep. But we probably have to start with SGA. He's MVP candidate. Let's not beat around the bush. How the Mavericks guard him is going to be really crucial. We saw what they did with James Harden, when they put DJ Derrick Jones Jr. on him, and he had a tremendous series. He was a monster defensively. The Mavericks, like you tweeted about earlier, they beat people up. They're physical. They've probably benefited the most from the post All-Star break rule changes, where teams just do not call refs just do not call fouls anymore, because the Mavericks just love beating people up. They went from one of the most fouling teams in the league last season and pre-All-Star break to now they're like the bottom third, and that helps a lot. They're able to get away with a lot. Not saying like they're playing the way they should be playing. Like, you know,
it's just so odd for us. Like, we don't know how to talk about it in context because we're usually on the other side of this and have been for 20 years, where it's like, that's a foul, and it never gets called.
Right.
Our guy Matthew, a Mavs Moneyball contributor, is often like the guy in our Slack complaining about fouls not going against the Mavericks. And since the change of rules, he's been much more quiet, because it's like the Mavericks just mug in the lane. You get within 10 feet of the basket and you're getting hit.
Yeah. It's amazing, because we've never watched. I mean, maybe the 2011 team, like, you can count on one hand how many Mavericks teams we've said that are very physically dominant on the defensive side of the ball. And the thing with Shea is he gets to the free throw line a ton. And he's still getting the free throw line a ton post All-Star break with all these rule changes. So you've got a Mavericks team that predicates themselves on being physical without fouling. And you've got a superstar on the other side that lives at the free throw line, regardless of how the refs are calling the game. Who's going to win that battle? And that's going to be huge. And SGA is herky-jerky. He's very crafty, but he's also very athletic. He's very long. You know, Harden, there's a little similarities to their game in terms of their craftiness and the pick and roll and using their body and kind of controlling the pace and the tempo and moving at their own speed. But SGA is just so much wildly more explosive than Harden right now. That it's going to be a challenge. You know, they might be able to use some of that blueprint, but Harden doesn't.
It's a very different Harden.
He's not a leaper.
Yeah. Harden is more akin to Luka in that he's incredibly strong and he used that strength. And SGA is so technically sound with all of his moves and so balanced. It's really wild because he operates in that 10 to 12 foot range. And when his little jumper is going, it feels unstoppable.
And that 10 to 12 foot range, that's pretty much what the Mavericks want to give up defensively, because they're taking, you know, they'll give you some threes, but they try to run teams off the line and force you to their two big rim protectors in Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively. They've been the best rim defense team since post All-Star break. I'm pretty sure that I don't have this looking up, but I'm going to bet that they've been the best rim protection team in the playoffs. And you look at SGA, he shot 52% in the regular season in the paint away from the restricted area. League average is 44. Loves that floater range. And the Mavericks want to give up floater range. Like, those are the shots that they are daring you to make. That's the series to me. Like, they continue to make those shots in the paint against the Mavericks' length of Lively and Gafford, and are the Mavericks going to have to change things up? Because if he's killing them in that area, it's like, wait a minute, that's what we've been doing. Like, that's our identity. It's like, we don't give you layups, but we'll give you the floaters. SGA is like, I'll take those shots. I'll take them all the time. Those are my favorite shots. So that's going to be the push-pull between this series is going to be how the Mavericks react to how SGA scores in and around the paint and how well that they can contest those shots without giving up the back line. Because if SGA is killing them in that paint away from the restricted area and the Mavericks are like, all right, let's creep up more, let's contest those shots more, that means you're pulling your rim protector away from the restricted area. Does that leave them open to backdoor cuts, to cutting, to driving lanes that give up that restricted area, which they've been walling off so well? So that's going to be the chess match, I think, of this series.
Makes me really nervous when I think about it, because then the other options that you talk about is you force the ball. Let's say the Mavericks do a good job in that, you know, paint the restricted area, and they start forcing the ball out of SGA's hands. He has options that are really, really good.
I believe they drove it more than any other team in the league this year. The Thunder. So yeah, that's the one thing. So you think, you know, okay, so what are you going to do? How are you going to protect the paint, guard the rim against this team? And it's probably going to be they're going to put a center on Josh Giddey because they're going to dare him to shoot.
I don't think they will.
You don't think they're going to
put that? I really don't think they will, because I think, Chet, if the Mavericks are without Maxey, who do you – like, where do you put PJ? Do you let PJ
– You put PJ on Chet, and you switch those pick and pops so you don't
– See, that scares the shit out of me, because Chet is really good.
I know, but – we've seen this Mavericks team against stretch fives with Gafford and Lively. It doesn't look good. Okay. They don't like switching Gafford and Lively in those stretch fives in the pick and pop. So you put PJ on Chet, you switch those screens so Chet doesn't get open pick and pop threes, and then you put Gafford or Lively on Giddey and you dare him to shoot. I think that's they might do that. But the problem with Giddey is, one, he's making his threes in the playoffs. We'll see if he does that. They're probably going to dare him again.
18 shots total in four games, which is not nothing. It's almost five attempts a game.
But the other thing is, like, I know Giddey gets made fun of a lot, but this isn't like – he's got some skills. Like,
Giddey is incredibly skilled. If he had a shot, he'd be unguardable.
Right.
He's like, good at everything else.
If you give him a runway, he's crafty enough to manipulate that space in the paint and use it as a driving lane and suck in defenses, make passes, score at the rim. So that's the thing. It's like, he's not like a Russell Westbrook or Amir Coffey or Terrence. Like, he's not one of these guys that you're just going to leave in the corner and he's not going to do anything. He's going to move around. He's going to move around a lot. So do you want your big man guarding him when he's driving? Do you want your big man having to contest those shots and be away from the paint? Again, that's going to be the chess match, I think, of the series is how they decide to attack that. Because, yeah, do you dare Chet to attack a smaller P.J. Washington? I mean, we saw what P.J. did against Victor Wembanyama, matched up one-on-one in isolation. I feel like the Mavericks are going to trust him to guard Chet if Chet wants to try to take him down on the block.
Maybe. I just think Chet sticks the three. I mean, Chet is a hell of a three-point shooter.
He is a hell of a three-point shooter.
And the Mavericks are so – it is by design. But the Mavericks are sometimes slow to close on threes because they'd rather give up the three.
Right.
And I just worry about that. I just do.
Yeah, big thing is going to be – do Dort and Giddey make threes? That's like the big thing for the Thunder. And if they do, that's going to force, they're going to have to move guys around. Like, because we've seen Lively and Gafford on Miles Turner earlier this season, did not look good. And you got to bet that the Thunder are watching tape of those Pacers games, because the Pacers are probably, like, offensively, aesthetically, the closest thing, you know, stylistically. Like, there's not a lot of teams that play five out. Like, there really isn't.
Nope.
Most teams have a big, you know, a defensive anchor paint big in some form or fashion. So they're going to look at that tape and see how the Pacers carved up the Mavericks and be like, I think we can do that with Chet. And then the Mavericks are going to have to adjust, because realistically they haven't guarded a stretch five team well all season. And honestly, what's funny enough is the best they ever did it was that regular season game, that first game post trade deadline, where the Mavericks just whooped the Thunder. But that's one game. Like, how much of a sample size do you take from
the game? Right. No. Does that carry forward? Well, and then the next item that you have is the how did the Mavericks address Maxey's injury? And we know, guys, and shout out to Bill Simmons for not knowing Maxey Kleber was basically out the whole series. That was fun. He's like, they found something with Maxey Kleber at the five. And it's like, they found that in 2019. What are we doing here? anyway, Kleber's out, and that changes things. Now, if there was one team that you would think that the lack of size wouldn't absolutely crush them, in theory it's the Thunder, because the Thunder don't play huge. In practice, I don't know where they turn, other, because my options, as I'm just kind of going through them, you know, Tim Hardaway is barely healthy. That's no thank you. You got Dante Exum, who can play bigger than his 6'5" every now and again, and you got Josh Green, who is Josh Green. And I don't like regular minutes for Josh Green. I like him more as a chaotic force for good. Who else could they possibly play?
They don't. I mean, that's the thing about Maxey that we've been talking about for years, and how he's kind of been so valuable, and we've been wanting to see the team wean themselves off of him. Mm-hmm. Not because we don't like Maxey necessarily.
I know.
Just trying to be nice. But just because it's like, he's hurt, he's getting older, you got to be able to find ways to do stuff when he's not on the floor, which they did a little. You know, PJ is a good example of that, but PJ's already been playing. It's not like PJ is not playing a ton of minutes. He's playing a ton of minutes in the playoffs. They don't have anyone else off the bench that really fits the max. Like, all the guys you listed are guards. Josh Green, Dante Exum, Tim Hardaway Jr., those are guards. I know Exum can play bigger, but he's a guard. He's not a forward. He can't play big. He can't play four. He can't play five. I don't know, maybe you just lean more into PJ. You know, I don't know how much more you can lean into PJ, but they just might have to live with playing with one big on the floor at the same time, because it's not like you can play Gafford and Lively together. It's not like you're going to play Powell and Lively or Powell and Gafford. And that's it. There's no, you know, they're not going to play Omax, who would be the theoretical, like, he's the only other player on the roster that could athletically do that, but they're not going to play a rookie cold in the playoffs. You're not probably going to play Markieff Morris, so that would be wild.
I think they will. I am just dying, because Keith keeps tweeting about it, and Jason Kidd has certain things about him that just feel so obvious from far away. And one of those things is playing the guy who knew this 5 years ago. That's maybe. All.
I don't know.
I hope I'm wrong, but I mean, I sort of get it for the size purpose. Also for the foul the fuck out of you purpose.
Yeah. I think if the Mavericks were playing like Denver or Minnesota, I think that makes more sense to dust off Markieff. Like, I can buy that more. But since the Thunder only play one big, I mean, they're kind of like the Clippers in the sense that they don't play a true power forward ever.
Right.
Like, they play four perimeter players and a center. And then they play, which is, this is going to get so confusing for us talking about this. They play the other Jalen Williams, big Jalen Williams. And he's another stretch five, but he's also like, you know, a 6'10", 6'9", 6'10", big. And they play him. I don't think they play him and Chet together almost much at all. So they play him with four perimeter players as well. So Kidd might not be forced to go double big or feel like he needs to replace Maxey with that Maxey plus center lineup, because the Thunder will, he can get away with it against this Thunder team as opposed to Minnesota or Denver, who play two big guys. You know, they have huge front courts all the time. So maybe they get away with it that way. They just don't have to worry about it. But the one, you know, that would have been an advantage for the Mavericks because their size is an advantage. And we saw against the Clippers that game five and game six, how nice it was having Maxey and another center on the floor, because if you, then you can play more aggressive. Your center, if you want to contest Shai Gilgeous-Alexander near the free throw line in the paint, you want Lively or Gafford up contesting. If he passes behind that, Maxey is a weak side shot blocker, is almost like cheating. Like, that's such an advantage. So they're going to have to hope PJ can replicate that, which I think he has a little bit. Like, he's been a good steals blocks guy since he's been in Dallas and really his whole career. So I think what they're going to hope is that PJ can replicate some of that, because he's shown the defensive chops since he's been in Dallas.
Yeah. And then the next thing was, you know, you'd written down that you'd like to chat a little about Lively and Gafford and what they can do in the paint. I think you have covered that some, but do you have anything else you want to note?
I'm just curious if they guard Chet. Like, are they going to let those two guard Chet after what we saw the five out offense, like the Pacers and what Miles Turner has done to them in the past? Because they don't really switch with those guys. Mm-hmm. We saw a little bit in the Clippers series. They were playing the level of the screen, but that's so much different when the screener is like a Zubats or a Plumlee, who you don't worry about popping to the 3-point line. Like,
yeah,
I'm just curious how much they're going to do it, because I imagine it's going to happen, right? Like, so. And then the other side of it is they have to exert their, you know, we'll talk about it on offense, but if they get beat up on that side of the ball where they get burned on the pick and pop three, you got to at least feel them on the, you know, offensive rebounds, scoring at the rim stuff. So,
yeah. I think that's going to be it. Well, we're about at the halfway point in the show. Those of you who are watching live, doesn't seem like that many people tonight, and that's okay. This was kind of a last-second planned show, and frankly, it's not game coverage, and that's what folks like reacting to the most during real time. If you could please consider liking the stream while you're in here, I would appreciate that. Those of you who are watching on the video, either live or a little bit later, if you consider subscribing to our show, we go live after every single game, talking about the game that was, and then I do a secondary live show after every playoff game, in particular, where you can come, you know, fire off your Dallas Mavericks takes or otherwise. Those of you listening on an audio stream, thanks so much for doing so. We're going to insert some ads right here. If you could listen to those, Josh and I would appreciate it, and we will be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Okay, so now it's on to the other side of the ball, the Mavericks offense versus the Oklahoma City Thunder defense. Where do you want to start?
Can Luka make threes?
No.
What do you think?
No. I don't think so. No. I think – so this is an interesting conversation in the sense that Luka Doncic is not on the injury report. That means he does not have an injury that the Mavericks are disclosing. If they are not disclosing an injury, they can be fined into oblivion. Not disclosing injuries is not okay by this NBA standard. So what we're dealing with Luka is a knee condition that doesn't meet the level of specific named injury. Likely, it's just bruised to absolute shit with how hard he slammed it into the ground. It's probably stiff, probably doesn't feel great. That on its face, then think about what you just talked about with the three-point shot. Him getting particular leverage for that step-back three is increasingly important for him, or it's like very obviously important to what he needs to do. I think he can still get the shot, but I think at a certain point he's aiming the shot. He's arming the shot. He was short a lot those last three games. And that just brings me a little bit of worry. Now, could 4 days off do him a lot of good or however many days off? Absolutely. Would love to be wrong here. But if we're going off of what Luka has said, he does not expect the injury to necessarily improve between now and when he can get any significant time off. Could he be rope-a-doping a little bit? Absolutely. I don't know how to feel about it, but I did say, I will tell you, the man kept shooting threes. They kept not going in. So I don't really know why anyone would expect that to change in a matter of 3 days. What do you think?
I don't know. It feels like the key to the series, because even though, and I wrote about this after game six, the Mavericks have a team that is built to survive and not require Luka to put on his Superman cape every single night. And that's the goal. Like, you don't want your star to have to score 45 points for you to win every single high leverage game against a good team. And they've built that team because they did it against the Clippers.
I do got to revise myself. So he is currently on the injury report as probable with the right knee sprain. But I look at the injury report. He was not on the game five and game six injury report against the Clippers. So I'm confused as all get out as to the reporting issue here. That's not to say I don't think he's injured. It's just, if he's injured enough to where he can't play, that's a different story.
He's playing.
So we have to talk about deal with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. He shot 24% against the Clippers from three. He shot 40%.
That's 14% off his season average. That's statistically impossible sounding. It's like he got an arm cut off.
I know. And, you know, it's huge because while like the Mavericks have built a team that can win without him needing to be Superman, like if you're going to beat the one seed in the West that also has an MVP candidate, that also has athletes that can also shoot and get up and down the floor just as fast as you can, like they're going to need him to have a couple moments. You know, he doesn't need to maybe average 40 points per game for the series, but they're going to need him to have like one or two big games. And he really only had like one of those.
Can
like
I offer you a counter to the threes, though?
But yeah.
Luka Doncic downhill going to the rim is a force the Thunder cannot fucking deal with. The Clippers couldn't deal with it, and they had bigger defenders. Lou Dort is very strong. Jalen Williams is very long. I think I honestly think that the Clippers defenders were more confounding to Luka than what the Thunder can throw at him. And I think if Luka just forces the issue and takes the 2-point floatery shots we were just talking about, that the Mavericks were going to, you know, have to maybe cede to SGA. I think the Mavericks can run the Thunder off the floor offensively. Luka, he was running in games five, and particularly in game six, he was running the floor and getting in the paint like we haven't seen since 2019, 2020. Yeah, he's got to do that.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say, because I know we were talking about a 3-point shot. Like he did everything else.
Yeah.
He was passing well. His turnovers weren't too bad. His defense was pretty, like, I would say he played great defense for games 2, 3, 5, and 6, which is 4 games out of in a 7-game series. That's beautiful. That's all you need from your superstar, really. I mean, you'd prefer every single game, but what are you going to do with a guy with huge usage? Like, he's done everything else. The 3-point shot is just the only thing that's really missing. Kirk, he is 13 of 14 at the rim in the playoffs. He's 93%. Like, everything going to the basket is still good for him, despite the fact that he can't hit threes. Also, he is shooting 59% in the mid-range. So whatever, that's what makes it so weird, because you would think, okay, if his knee's bothering him and he can't make threes on his jumper, then maybe it's like his jumper. But he's making long twos, which, I don't know, maybe the distance or something to it. I don't know.
I think he gets a little more, like, I think he, and this is me not under, so please, tell guys, feel free to tell me if I'm wrong. But I think he gets the load up a little better on his turnaround fadeaways, where he gets a little deeper into his push off, whereas the step back is it's a diagonal backwards motion. He usually gets a lot of leverage, but I don't think he's able to get that right now.
Yeah. So, like, really, if the threes are all that's missing, if he makes threes, then he did everything else he needed to do in the playoffs besides making threes. It's just making threes has been such an important part of his game this season, because he's taking more than ever. He's made more than ever. And in the regular season, he got to the rim less than he's ever gotten in his entire career, which is okay if you're making 38% of your threes, which is what he did in the regular season. So that's going to be huge. And really, you know, that's not something, you know, scheme wise, they can do a better job getting him more catch and shoots. I don't think they got him good catch and shoots against the Clippers. They did in game six, but a lot of the cool stuff they did, and I think that might be the next bullet point here. But they need to do a better job getting him catch and shoots, and that can be because they need to do a better job running some of that cool offense that they run in like the last month of the regular season that pretty much vanished against the Clippers in terms of off-ball movement and stuff other than give Luka the ball and get out of the way, which I think they did a little bit too much against the Clippers in round one.
I'm going to be very interested to see on that. One thing you don't actually have on this rundown is I've seen a lot of guessing that Jalen Williams will actually guard Kyrie, because if there's one thing that Kyrie isn't, he's not tall. And so if you're going to do something with Kyrie, length and paired with some moderate strength might be your best option. And Williams is, I think he would appreciate being labeled a dog. He is just a grindy guy, and I'm looking forward to seeing how the Mavericks work things to get Kyrie shots.
Because historically, he struggled the most against length. When he has struggled,
sure. It's been, yeah,
long guys.
And you know, I think what we'll see, and this will probably drive everybody crazy. Well, not everybody, but a significant number of fans crazy, where we're gonna see the traditional Luka early load in terms of shot attempts. And then we're going to see Kyrie work his way into the game like always. It's not going to be like Clippers game 5, Clippers game 6, where Kyrie sort of asserted himself. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to be wrong, but I think Luka feeling his way out and letting Kyrie also do the same in his own way, it's worked for most of the season. Why not continue to work it now?
Yeah, for sure. And Kyrie's going to, you know, it's going to be interesting how they kind of split Dort and Jalen Williams against Luka and Kyrie, because like you said, Williams has got the length to bother Kyrie, but also Luka against Dort hasn't been that like the Mavericks, I think, have won that matchup because Dort's like 6'4". So Luka would probably love, like Luka kind of, I think, enjoys is the right word. But he can just shoot over Dort. Like even if Dort muscles him up towards the basket a little bit, like Luka can just flip
it. Luka's also floaters. Luka has said that he feels that Dort is one of the best at guarding him. I think McDaniels on the Wolves is probably the actual best.
Yeah.
But I think Luka feels that Dort guards him the best because Dort gets into Luka the hardest. He is probably the most physical guy outside of Marcus Smart in the NBA. And who's the guy for the Rockets that played with Memphis? What's wrong with me? Super Troll. I can't even think of him right now.
Patrick Beverly?
No.
Tony Allen?
What are you doing? No.
Who played for who?
Who plays for the Rockets and right he now? Played for Memphis.
Jeff Green?
No, you're killing me with this. You're going to make this is how bad we are at this.
He plays for the Rockets right now.
Right now.
And he used to play for Memphis. Oh, Dylan Brooks.
Yes. Sorry. My brain is fried.
Wow.
I was just sitting there. I could see his ugly face. And like Brooks, you know, Brooks, I don't even think Brooks guards Luka that well. I think Brooks just trolls him. And hits him and hurts him. Dort gets underneath him and powers through. Captain Crunch says he's worried that Dort is going to hurt Luka worse than he is. Dort is out there playing football. I don't know. I still think Dylan Brooks is like the cheapest player in the league to guard Luka, but that's just me. What else do we have here?
I think we probably need to get into because the Thunder are well coached. They got the coach.
Yeah.
So we got to talk, you know, I just highlighted, we got to talk about, and I assume this is going to happen, but NBA coaches keep surprising me because sure. I think me and you have universally agreed that the best way to guard the Mavericks is let Luka, let Kyrie work one-on-one, stay home on the role players. If you're running a high screen role with Luka and Lively, don't leave Lively. Don't give him a lob. Like Luka loves throwing lob. Like the Mavericks are dangerous when Luka is beating you with the pass. That's when they're the most dangerous. Which is always so funny when everyone brings up the point about Luka needs to get his team more involved and all this stuff. Like Luka would rather beat you with a pass than with a shot for the most part. And I think the Mavericks are at their best when Luka is beating you with his pass and not a shot. So yeah. I don't understand why teams put two on the ball in the Luka pick and roll. I don't understand why they put two on the ball in Luka ever. I would assume just let him score one-on-one, see, and then put your other defenders just stay home because that's a weakness of this Mavericks offense is outside of Luka and Kyrie, they don't have a lot of creation. You know, PJ Washington's done a little bit better. Dante Exum, Josh Green, the come and goes. Exum has been a no-show in the playoffs. PJ has been good as a spot-up guy, but in terms of, like, a driver, you know, you probably would rather have that than Luka doing something. But you take your chances one-on-one against those guys, and then you just see if Luka and Kyrie can outscore you, and maybe you tire out Luka a little bit, which is what we've seen. We've seen these games where the Mavericks have lost where Luka scores, like, 40, and no one else does really anything, and then Luka can't do it all because it's impossible for one guy to beat another team consistently. So if the Thunder employ that strategy and they stay home on the role players, they don't give up the lobs, they rather let Luka score than give up open spot up threes or open lob dunks, all that stuff. How do you counter that? Because you can't just have Luka try to outscore over and over. He gets tired or it's just not going to work. So we've seen them do this in the regular season. Gafford at the high post with guys setting back screens. Luka and Kyrie specifically setting back screens for those role players to free them up. Gafford had a bunch of assists in March, and he's done none of that in the Clippers series. More off-ball movement for Kyrie off screens. Yeah. Like, I haven't seen Kyrie run off a bunch of screens since the playoffs have started. Where did that stuff go? And more Luka-Kyrie pick and rolls. Did Luka or Kyrie – I think I saw Kyrie set, like, two picks for Luka in that entire first-round series. I don't have the data in front of me, so maybe it's more. But I can only remember twice. And both were the clear, like, let's force the switch so Luka can work in isolation, not like a legit pick and roll, which we've seen. We've seen Kyrie set screens for Luka and pop, and they run this pick and pop, and it's beautiful. They need to do more. That's how you do that. That's how you mix things up and you get these guys.
Now is not the time. Like, I didn't understand this against the Clippers. It's not the time to hold shit back.
No.
What are we doing? I mean, I think they believed in their own game plan enough against the Clippers to be able to think that they would outlast them. And again, kid deserves credit for that. So they didn't have to dip too deep into the bag. Thunder, I got some weird pushback from anybody that was Thunder adjacent for me today when I was talking about how good the Mavericks defense is now relative to a regular season. A lot of people thought that I was taking a shot at the Thunder defense. Not at all. It's more that the Mavericks are just weirdly effective now where they haven't been up in, you know, the entire Luka Doncic era simply because, and we've talked about this, playoff basketball is extremely fucking physical. I mean, this Wolves Nuggets game is one of those things right now. Like the Wolves are hammering the Nuggets. And I sort of expect that with the Mavericks and the Thunder in the sense of I get that the Thunder are a physical team. I'm telling y'all, the Mavericks are more physical. They just are. Like Dort is very physical. SGA is not a super physical guy. Chet is not a super physical guy. Jalen Williams is the Williams. They're tough mofos. And so it's, I just think it's going to come as a surprise. That's all. But how the Mavericks deal with the Thunder's really, really spectacular defense is going to be fascinating to me because they've had 9 days to mess around with this.
Yeah.
They're going to come ready.
Yeah, and I wonder if, you know, when we talked about Luka and Kyrie not running a lot of pick and rolls, does Luka's knee, are they, like, aware of that? And they're like, hey, let's not let this guy set picks if his knee hurts. Because we need to save him for other things. Like, I almost, like, I'm just going to ask you, do you think if he was healthier and the knee wasn't an issue, do you think that leads into it? Or do you think they're just falling into bad habits?
Oh, I think... I don't have a good answer.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to see, though, because if they don't do it in this series, it's going to be really hard to win. Because I think the kind of low-key – well, not low-key. I mean, it was pretty evident. Mavericks won that Clippers series with defense. Their offense was great. And when their offense was great, it was great in transition. I got the stats up right now. Where is it? It's in one of my tabs. Come on, okay, so I've got – I'm not counting play-in, cleaning the glass. When you do playoffs, they throw in the play-in teams. And like, I don't want the play-in teams there. So since the normal playoffs have started, the 16 playoff teams, since round one started, the Mavericks are 10 out of the 16 teams in half-court offense, which is very low for a team with Luka Doncic. Like the Mavericks historically, even this season, post-trade deadline, they kill it in the half-court. They absolutely kill in the half-court because Luka is – an incredible half-court player because he is half-court offense. He's a half-court offense unto himself. They're 10th in half-court offense. Oklahoma City is 5th. But the Mavericks in transition, hold on, let me switch it. Mavericks in transition are 6th out of the 16 playoff teams. And when you look at points per how many points did this team score per 100 transition plays? The Mavericks are 2nd in the playoffs out of the 16 playoff teams. They have been scoring because their defense has been so great in creating turnovers and making splash plays. We talked about it during the Clippers series. The Mavericks are one of the top steals blocks teams in the playoffs. I think they're averaging about 13.5 combined steals and blocks per game in the playoffs, which is either like 1st or 2nd among the 16 teams. They killed the Clippers because they're getting steals, they're generating turnovers, and they're getting out in the break, or they're blocking shots off the backboard and then turning that into instant offense the other way. When they had to score in the half court, it didn't look great. So against a Thunder team that is not as disadvantaged athletically, like the Mavericks bullied the Clippers. Like they made them look old and slow. I'm not gonna take a shot in the dark here. I don't think the Mavericks are gonna make the Thunder look old and slow. So if they don't have that superior athletic advantage that's allowing them to get out and transition and score, they got to tune things up in the half court. They got to be better in the half court. So they got to do these things we're talking about. They got to see if they can get Gafford at the high post, running backdoor screeners against them. They got to see if they can run some more Kyrie Luka direct action screening and rolling. And they got to run Kyrie off more screens and get him involved as a chaos engine off the ball, which I don't think they got to do a lot because Luka was so limited offensively against the Clippers. They kind of had Kyrie with the ball in his hands a lot, like especially in the second half. So they're going to have to figure out their half court for sure. If they play half court offense like they did against the Clippers, this will be a short series for the Thunder. That's, you know, no mincing words there.
So I'm looking for the stats, and I don't think I'm going to be able to find them quickly enough, in the sense of the Mavericks. I don't want to, people don't like this sort of stuff just because it really plays into like worst elements of what happens within this team. But the Mavericks in their game ones during Jason Kidd, the Mavericks have played fucking terrible. Okay. They are 0-4 in game ones, and yet they've won these series, right? Here's the thing. I'm trying to find the biggest like leads that they've given up. So against the Clippers, they were down by as many as 29, 30 something points. Against the Golden State Warriors, they got just destroyed from the get-go. They lost that. They were down by as many as 25 in that game. They lost by 25. Against the Phoenix Suns, that might have been the only game that was relatively close, but the Mavericks still fell behind by double digits for significant portions of that game. Against the Utah Jazz, the Jazz game,
no Luka.
This was the no Luka Utah Jazz game was the only one that was actually close, and the Mavericks, you know, just barely kind of lost that one. I say all this to say that, like, if the Mavericks have a they do not have time, they do not have talent to fuck around, to feel out. The coaching staff, I saw somebody in the comments say that this is where Jason Kidd gets. Yeah, here it is. He says, I feel like this is the series where Kidd's inability to make adjustments and poor situational awareness is going to stand out. OKC has the better coach. I mean, I think Mark Daigneault is a pretty good coach, pretty amazing coach, actually. But having all your players healthy the whole year is also pretty helpful. I just need to say that out loud. Like, Kidd didn't have that. It's not that I want the Mavericks to pull out all the stops and act like this is 2016 when the Ray Felton game happened, when the Mavericks won by 1 point. I think it was 85-84. It's like one of the ugliest playoff games in history. But I need the Mavericks to come out and show like and play their good cards early and get ahead. Do you feel like I'm overemphasizing that?
I don't think so, because this is going to sound crazy, because they lost in 2020. They lost to the defending champion. They lost to the team that won the NBA title. I think this Thunder team might be the best playoff team they've played in the playoffs in the Luka era.
Not
is that crazy?
The Warriors in
2020. That's what I'm saying.
Were pretty amazing.
They were pretty amazing. I don't know. It's right. It's neck and neck, but I mean, they're certainly a better team than that 2022 Clippers team, that 2022 sure. Jazz team. I would even say they're better than some of those Clippers teams they
played. Oh, and definitely the Phoenix teams. Yeah, no, I agree with you.
It's just they could get away with losing game one because that Phoenix team, when they punched them back in the mouth, they folded like crazy. And then that Jazz team also, like, they beat them up and they went away. Like, I don't think you're going to punch this Thunder team and they're going to roll over and show their belly.
I agree.
So, like, giving up that game, it's not going to be, I mean, they don't have home court advantage. If they split, that's all you care about. But it's just going to be, they don't have room. Like you said, they don't have room to mess around. I know Jason Kidd definitely likes to feel things out.
He seeds the game. I mean, that's happened.
Yeah, it's got to be competitive. And without Maxi, there's not a lot of room to feel things out because they got to start doing new things, right? Like, because you don't have Maxi. So what are you going to do? You got to try something different. But that said, if they leave Oklahoma City after game two with a 1-1 split, I don't know how mad people are if they lose game one again. And maybe that just becomes a weird, quirky statistical oddity under Jason Kidd. But yeah, you would love to see them, that they use this time off to prepare. And even if they lose, I think you're not even saying they need to win. You're just like, hey, can we just not get drilled by 20, which is kind of what they've been doing in most of game ones.
Yeah, that's what's mostly happened. And I can't handle it. Yeah. I physically cannot handle it, because if Jason Kidd is the coach that the Mavericks believe him to be, they have got to stop fucking around with the time that is given to them. I mean that in the sense of the regular season, which the Mavericks just don't really take all that seriously. up until March, apparently.
I was about to say, up until, and then it turns into,
and then they turn into, you know, it's like the NCAA or NC State team that won, and Jim Valvano way back in the day. And then with the playoffs, starting off every series down 0-1, it's just gonna bite you. Now, it hasn't, obviously, by the stats that we put out earlier in the game, but for my own sanity, for the way that we cover this team, for everybody's health in the Dallas-Fort Worth area with the Stars also playing in the playoffs at the same time, can you just put your best foot forward? If they lose, they lose. I don't want to see them get rocked. That's the thing that I hate. Three of these four losses, they have been embarrassed, and I hate that.
I know. Well, you're not going to like this because the Thunder are a good three-point shooting team. So if they get caught on the wrong side of the variance wheel, they might get rocked even if they come prepared, you know?
Yeah.
Like if the Thunder just decide to make 21 three-pointers, you're like, well, shit. I don't know. But I totally understand what you mean. And also, it's not fun to talk, you know, it's not fun for us. Listen, Mavericks, when you're better, we do better. So we need you to be better. Like, we're not even talking fan rooting interests. Like, our pockets are a little fuller when you guys play better because more people like to watch and listen to win reactions than losses. So we need y'all to help us out a little bit. Help pay for daycare.
Sure.
Do the right thing, Mavericks.
I like there are people that are arguing with us about this.
Wait, what?
This is the chat.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Players need to go play, blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah, I get it. Don't disagree. Players need to play better. Not going to argue that point. What else do we got? What else do we want to finish with?
I don't know. On this part, is there anything, any dark horse contributors, matchups? We already talked about coaching. Anything we haven't talked about? Any players on the Thunder that we haven't talked about?
I want to see Dante Exum do something.
This would really be a good series for him to do something, considering how the Clippers play or how the Thunder play.
Yep, the Clippers basically put him in a no man's land where he was having to take weird shots. He got to orchestrate the offense a little bit and did okay every now and again. But I want to see him connect on some outside jumpers. I want to see him, you know, play with some of the force that he had attacking the rim during the regular season.
Play with assertiveness. He looked lost. Which was weird because that was not what it was like the opposite. It's like he got monstarred right before game one.
Yeah, that's right. And that's sort of my X factor guy. I mean, the Tim Hardaway minutes, which are going to happen. They need to have him on a Davis Bertans. Like,
he's staff. Healthy for game one.
They need to have him on a Davis Bertans like shot diet where it's like, all right, if you hit your first two, you're fine. Keep playing. If you miss your first two, you're out of here. Yeah.
I think on the Thunder, I'm curious how much big Jalen Williams plays because he's kind of their backup center. Curious how much Cason Wallace plays as a rookie. He had 17 minutes a game in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Wiggins is interesting. Just kind of like athletic, rangy wing. Like, he's kind of like their Josh Green, except I think he contributes a little bit more consistently than Green does occasionally. But everyone they put on – the thing about the Thunder, everyone they put on the floor like moves. Like they don't have any slow old guys. Like, they're young and athletic. So like, you're gonna need Exum to come off the bench and give you something. You're gonna need Josh Green to come off the bench and give you something, because the Thunder players don't, like, even if they're not like incredible, like, you feel their physical presence because like everyone they play is athletic. Like, it just makes it difficult. So
yeah, it does. Well, can't really think of anything else.
Your predictions? Do you feel confident in doing a prediction? I'm going to put you on the spot.
I mean, I think it'd be really like, just, I mean, full disclosure, my wife planned a 40th birthday party for me on May 18th. She did this back in February 1st, maybe even January, because we wanted to give a chance for anybody that we know out of town to decide if they wanted to come in.
I think the Mavericks were like 26 and 23 when you
like, this is when around the time like Nick Angstadt was calling for kids firing over there on Locked On Mavs, like that far back. And so we're like, okay, well, if the Mavericks are playing, that'd be nice, it'd be funny. And then like, as it got closer and closer, it became a real thing. And so like, game six is quite literally then. And so I think it would be just perfectly hilarious to where I would have to fucking podcast on my birthday party or at my birthday party, since we have enough media people who are probably going to come. So let's just go Mavs and six, because it'd be hilarious.
Feels like the fates say Mavs and six then, because doesn't that feel right that we're broadcasting some Mavs party from your house live on
right.
your birthday? Like, that feels right.
Just what's very stupid.
Yeah. Right? What's really tough for me is I want to pick Mavs in seven.
Sure. But
road teams just don't win game sevens. They don't.
I really look forward to seeing playing in that environment, though. Like, the Oklahoma City environment might be the closest thing to a consistent European crowd that the NBA has. OKC's crowd is great.
They're really good. And I know Luka literally won a game seven on the road in 2022 against Phoenix, but different. OKC.
Asking two playoff runs, kind of hard.
Yeah. So I want to say Mavs in seven, because I think that's how I think these two teams are. I think they're really good. So then it's like, I want to say Mavs in six, but I almost feel like that's disrespectful to the Thunder and how good they are, because, you know, to not have home court advantage and win in six, like, that's really, you know, win four out of six times against the one seed in the West. I'm like, I don't know. So, but I don't want to say Thunder in six, because I don't think the Mavericks are going to lose. So I'm hedging, but I will just say Mavericks in six. Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if it went seven at all.
Josh and I are, one of the things I think we at least take some pride on is the fact that I'm a fan, you're much more of an analyst. We respect the shit out of this Thunder team.
Yeah.
I did with the Clippers too. I'm too old for this yelling about particular teams. Like, I have a hard time, like, even disliking elements of this Thunder team just because they just have so many good players.
Jealous. It's not fair.
All right. We've been at it for an hour.
We did it.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow night, probably around 11:30. Get some sleep. Enjoy the game. And everybody, have a good Tuesday. We will talk soon. Go Mavs.